am so excited to be partnering with Staples Studio for this episode. There are 7 studio locations across Canada, and that's where you can also film your podcast or do some co-working.
I did the TV segment. I can't watch it back. I don't even know, because I was in shock. I didn't know what was going on. The ambulance came. Greg was having a stroke. We now need to do surgery on your husband. We have to remove his skull. And you have to make a choice now. Either you remove his skull and he could die, or you don't remove part of his skull and he's going to die. You know, he had surgery and I showed up for my radio show like that afternoon. Surgery in the morning, radio show in the afternoon. No one knew. I still don't make sense of it. It's difficult because I'm a living widow.
So I know you already heard a little bit about Taylor, but I do want to say one thing. Whether she's behind the mic, on camera, or creating online content, Taylor brings the kind of energy that makes you think, I'd love to hang out with her. And that's what we get to do. Welcome, Taylor Kay. Taylor and I met, was it Stephen and Chris? Was that where we met?
Yeah. And I think you actually, one of your other shows you did, I think it was with
Save Us From Our House.
Yeah. It was with someone, a neighbor of mine, Dale.
We did their Dale.
Yeah. Yes. So this is like a neighbor of mine that introduced me to Hannah, and you had a TV show, and then there was another TV show for us to go on, and I auditioned. And so when I auditioned for the TV show, I think, you know, we know there's sometimes there can be mean girls. There is mean girls. And we're not mean girls here. They're like, clearly you're not auditioning for modeling. I'm like, no, just a lifestyle expert, but that's okay.
Well, one of the things that I will say as I've gotten to know Taylor, so this was during Stephen and Chris, because we would sometimes be on the same show. So we're in the green room together. Taylor is one of the nicest people I have met in the business. Taylor, I don't know if you remember this, but when I was starting out in the coaching world and I was doing my certification training with PGI, with Proctor Gallagher Institute. And one of the things we had to do was do a video of us showing the stick person, which is the way that you show the conscious and the subconscious mind. And this is like, we're talking about 10 years ago. And I reached out to Taylor and I was like, Taylor, could I come and film this at your place? And she's like, yes, of course. Do you remember this,
yes,
Taylor?
Yes, I remember. Because I always say yes.
She
Even
always
if there's like 10
yes.
things, I'm like, yeah, sure.
And so then she's like, okay, I've set you up. I've got to go and record, because you have a recording studio in your house. You're like, I've got to go record a radio show, but you're all set up.
Yes.
But you did it in between a radio show.
Yes.
That you did it. But that was the thing about you, Taylor, is that you always are there for people. And that's how it's been over the last few years. And even you saying yes to this, I mean, we see each other at some industry things, but it's not like we're hanging out all the time or anything like that.
But I feel with Hannah, it's like, and I know a lot of you work with Hannah, or if you haven't, you should work with Hannah. If you're watching the podcast, click the link, work with Hannah. But I just find we could pick up. If we don't talk for 3 months, I just know I can pick up, and she's one of those friends with no judgment, and just like, I can go blah and just have like verbal diarrhea with you and you'll listen and then give me some direction. Like even when we were in the green room just minutes ago. Right. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Well, so Taylor and I we're friends, we're online, and I can see what she's up to. And there was something that had happened that I had no idea about. In 2023, I open up Facebook and I see something that honestly, Taylor, for me, it was like a punch in the gut. There is a GoFundMe for you and your family because of what has happened with your husband. But this is at least 6 months or so later that I'm seeing this. What happened with your husband happened on September 26, 2022. And this was in 2023 that I see this. And I could not believe, first of all, that this happened and that you had been holding this all on your own. Just maybe a few people knew. Can you tell us about what happened on September 26, 2022?
Yeah, it was. And, you know, as public as I am and as public as people, there's some things that you want to keep private. And I'm a radio and TV personality. And there's a saying, you're as good as your last show. And I'm like, I've got to keep this private, because I don't want my last show to happen, because I'm founder and entrepreneur, very similar to other people watching and you guys here. So I was getting ready for TV. I do TV at the house, like Ken has been over, and I have like a lighting grid and everything. And the night before I prepped and, you know, said goodnight to my husband. Even when we argue, we would say, I love you. I don't like you sometimes, but I love you. And that's important. That's an important note. But anyway, we went to bed. The next day we woke up and we'd wake up at, I call it stupid o'clock, to get up for TV and radio. It could be 4:35 in the morning. And he was still tired. So we let him sleep in because I had to prep. And then my daughter tried to wake him up. It was like 7:30. Now we're getting ready. We have to be live on TV at 8 o'clock in the city is called Ottawa in Canada. I know people watch all over. It was CTV Ottawa. And when Greg came down the stairs, he wasn't able to talk. And he was able to walk, but something was up. And I'm like, what is happening? But there was a lot going on. And I have producers in my ears saying, you're going to be going on in 5 minutes. And I'm like, I don't think we can go on. Something's going on. There's an emergency. But again, it's Zoom. So the producers really tuning in and out. They're listening, but not. I'm rushing with Greg, sitting him down, saying, what is going on? And he can't talk. He'd have a coffee. And this is when I knew something was up. My daughter had chocolate milk and he took the cup and started licking the cup. And I'm like, okay, this is bizarre. And as I'm doing this, the producer is saying, you're on in a minute. And then counting down, I'm like, I can't do this. And then I yelled at my daughter and I said, call 911. And then she brought my husband outside on a porch because I was like in shock. I did the TV segment. I can't watch it back. I don't even know because I was in shock. I didn't know what was going on. The ambulance came. Greg was having a stroke.
Okay, so you're in that moment. He starts to lick the cup, and
it wasn't sexual. He's not like, hey, yeah, after this segment, and the kids are in school. I'm like, that's a hard no anyway.
You know, Taylor, I think it's your sense of humor and being self-deprecating that has probably helped you over the last few years.
I do have a dark sense of humor.
And you need that sometimes, yeah,
exactly.
Right? In moments like this. So he's doing that, but you're hearing you're going live in a minute. Mm-hmm. And there's a countdown. But you have a background in nursing or something.
I have a kinesiology degree, which is so bizarre, and I'm a DJ. But I used to teach first aid and CPR as an instructor trainer for the Red Cross and for heart and stroke for many, many years. And I stopped just before COVID because you couldn't really do stuff in person. But I had that for 25 years. So I knew the signs and symptoms. And I knew that Greg needed to get to a stroke hospital. There are stroke hospitals when you're in a large city. There's specific hospitals like a cancer hospital, a stroke hospital, a heart hospital. So when the ambulance came, Greg was still conscious. So they didn't want to take him to the stroke hospital. And I needed to get him there. And they wouldn't. They said, sorry, you know, they brought us to a general hospital, which, you know, is fine, but not for his condition. And then 12 hours later at that hospital, while I was advocating, he had a major stroke. And then he is what he is now. He's nonverbal and paralyzed. They had to remove his skull.
Okay.
So I know you're going to ask about that.
I know. We're going to go into all of this. But just imagine, you just said goodnight to your partner, your husband, the night before. The next day, your whole world is completely different. Your whole world. Now, how many children do you have and what ages are the girls at this time?
I have three. They're 18, 15, and 14. And, you know,
Now. So this was a few years ago.
Yeah, they were 11, 12, and 15. And just turned 11.
So tell us when the ambulance came. So then your show was done. When your show was done, had the ambulance arrived?
It was already there. And neighbors
were coming. And who's with Greg?
My 11-year-old at the time, Jackie. The other two were doing their makeup and not knowing what was going on. Like, had music blaring. And I was like shouting, get downstairs. Something's going on with Daddy. And the neighbors started coming over. And I won't get emotional, but then I'm
get
like...
Get emotional. So
yeah. I know. But it's, you know, and then I was like, okay, now what? Okay, I've got to do a radio show. I got to get these kids to school. I got to get him in an ambulance. And I had to be on TV that night for a channel called CP24. I'm calling them as I'm talking to the ambulance because I'm trying to salvage everything. I'm like, my life is about to change right now. And who's going to be making the money. Honestly, like that was in, you compartmentalize. I'm like obviously thinking about Greg going, okay, he's got the hospital, ambulance is here, kids got to go to soccer and dance. And they were crying when they all came downstairs. And I'm like, you're going to soccer and dance tonight. Daddy's going to be fine. But it was a lot.
So it's so interesting what happens in our mind. You're still trying to figure out how to get everybody to where they need to go, including yourself, and get Greg to the hospital. And get him to the right hospital. So now you're at the hospital. Are you at the hospital with
him? So we're at the hospital. And it's like, you know, just after 8 o'clock. So like 7:30, everything happened. It's quick. Like it's the ambulance takes us. I'm now texting every single friend that and every contact that's a doctor, going, get me to a stroke hospital now. I'm going to just pick him up and take him out like myself. And unfortunately, when you're at the hospital, it's really hard to move someone that like, he was like in and out of consciousness a bit, but he was still conscious, but I could still see the, slurring and, he could text sometimes, but his texts were confused. And he was writing, dreams are over. And that was really hard. And he was sending me pictures of the girls, like while we were sitting there. Cause I'm like, right. I might need a Kleenex. I know. No. But I'm like, dreams aren't over. We got this. We're going to do this. I'm like, you have aphasia. It's not a major stroke right now. And aphasia is when your words are all confused in your mind and not communicating. And then unfortunately 12 hours later, he had the major stroke where he went into a fetal position and then like started like almost like a, well, he was having major seizures in front of me and grabbing his, with his able bodied, with his right side, cause his left side was now completely, paralyzed. He was grabbing, trying to move his arm. And I'm like, and I will say the nurse walked in, she went, what the fuck? And then I was like, sorry, I know we're sorry. I'm like, what the fuck? Exactly. We were supposed to go to a stroke hospital. This wouldn't have happened. Like, what are we doing? And who knows, you know, you can't go back in time, you know, when it's your time, you know, but, they whipped us. They then took us to the stroke hospital where then the doctor, there was another hospital that they took us in an ambulance while he had already had the stroke. And they're like, there's nothing we can do.
And so he's texting dreams are over.
That was when he was just before the major stroke, and the dreams, the way he spelt it, I could tell like his words, it's like what he has now with aphasia. It's like you have the game of Scrabble and someone has just taken all the words and mixed it all up. So he spelt dreams like D R M E A S or whatever, mm-hmm. But I knew what he was writing.
And so when you get to the next hospital now, the stroke hospital, what's the prognosis? What are they telling you? And this is, we're still in 24 hours,
right? We're still in 24 hours. This is now, this is probably 8 o'clock at night. Like now they've whipped us to another hospital and they're doing the scans and everything. And they're seeing how severe the stroke is. And they're like, it has affected his entire, like one side of his brain. And his right side, because it's the left side that's paralyzed. I have to always think about like right side, left side. And they show you the picture and it's like, you know, when you look at a healthy brain, there's activity and then there's like, it looks like space, nothing's there. And I'm like, well, what can we do? And then they're like, nothing. He's ICU's problem now. We can't do anything. You're going to go back to the other hospital. I'm like, no, we're staying here. At the stroke hospital where I'm not going back to the other hospital. Not that I had a problem with that, but I'm like, no, he's had a stroke. We're going to stay here. They're like, no, you're going back. We need the bed for someone else that has a stroke. Now he's had a stroke. He needs to go. And we go back.
So you went back? They transported him back?
Yes. But then that wasn't our final hospital.
Oh my goodness. So this is all again within 24 hours.
Yeah. So this, now they transfer us back to the original hospital. It's now 10 o'clock at night. There's no rooms for us there. We're like in a hallway and I'm sleeping on a floor and then they find us a room and he's continuously having seizures, like because he's not knowing what's going on and moving like in a way like flailing. And I'm trying to like move his arms and, you know, I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. And, the next morning I was asleep on the floor and the neurologist at the original hospital said to me, if we don't get your husband back to the stroke hospital, yeah, he's going to die. And I'm like, but we were there last night. Why are we going back and forth? And as we know, strokes, it's all about timing.
Yes.
So they then shipped us back to the stroke hospital. And I'm crying and I'm like,
And where are the girls at this point? What do they think that is going on?
They're still, I had taken pictures the night before when he was able-bodied. And I mean, they know this now, but I was showing pictures like he was fine-ish because they're like, how's daddy? I'm like, mommy's looking after him. I had like selfie pictures of when he was okay-ish, just the aphasia. And I had like neighbors. I had nobody. I don't have family close by. My brother did stop by and now he lives closer. But they're at soccer, they're at dance. I'm like, and taking music lessons. I'm like, everything's great. Everything's going to be good. Cause I didn't want to scare them, but sleeping on the floor, going back to now the stroke hospital. We're now like, it's now the next day and it's 3 a.m. and I'm sleeping on a floor and I'm going to be honest, it's a sketchy hospital that I was at. And I was holding onto my purse, sleeping on the floor because I know people are not mentally well and all the, but there was someone that was a little bit high on crack. I was going to say like it was, and he was coming. I'm like, I grew up in a steel city. My steel city came out that night. So I'm like, step off right now, bud. But the hospital, I think they would have hired me for security, I think at some point. They had like a rabbi and a priest. It's like almost a joke that came to me because they're like, okay, we now need to do surgery on your husband. We have to remove his skull and you have to make a choice now. Either you remove his skull and he's not going to be the same and he could die, or you don't remove part of his skull and he's going to die. So I'm like, oh, now what do I do?
So sorry, the choices are, again, remove his skull and you have to make this choice.
But I'm at 3 a.m. with a gentleman that's a little bit high beside me. I'm like, that's not well. And I'm like, can we remove him so I can make my decision here?
So the decision is to either remove his skull and he won't be the same.
And he won't be the same. And he could die.
And he could die. Or?
So you'll keep this. Yeah. Remove his skull and he might not be the same. Or keep the skull on, but the stroke is continuing to grow and it will kill him. Because it will continue to grow in his brain. And here's the thing, when you have a stroke, and I've talked to my family members about this too, like, and it's from CPR and first aid and stuff back in the day, when you have a stroke, it's never a good idea to have a stroke, clearly, but when you're older, your brain is shrinking. So when people are in their 70s, 80s, and 90s, their brain is smaller, so it has room for the stroke to kind of grow in the skull. When you're a younger person, you have a healthy brain, you don't have room in your skull, so they had to remove part of his skull to allow the stroke to continue to happen. And I'm like, can we make it stop?
Okay. And so before this point, had you and Greg ever had conversations about what do we do if we're ever in a situation like this?
Because we have a dark sense of humor, we would like, I'd say like, you know, if this ever happens, you know, and not just like stroke, just anything. If I'm in an incapacitated, you know, position, car accident, life, whatever, 6 months. And we had decided on 6 months, this is our magic number, unplug me. But you know, when you get remarried, I will haunt both of you. So I will haunt you. No.
Is that what you were thinking of when you had to make these decisions? Like we did agree to 6 months.
Yes. And now, you know, clearly he is, you know, we've discussed stuff and I've discussed stuff with my children. I've changed my number because 6 months. He was, when he did wake.
What was the decision that you made?
I took a skull off and it's called a bone flap. And it was like a right bone flap. I think I have to remember, but it was one of the sides that they literally take part of your skull off and you know, it's scary. And then they're like, and he'll wake up. And the next morning he didn't wake up.
And what do the girls know at this point? Because when was that done? Like immediately?
Within like 36 hours. I'd say 36, like we're closing in on. And then after the 48th hour, that's when he was not waking up.
And so what do the girls know at this point now?
They know he's getting surgery. It's going to help him. I didn't say it was going to save him, but he's getting surgery to help his condition.
Okay. Okay. So he has the surgery. Okay. So first of all, you've had a wild 36, you know, 72 hours at this point.
Yeah.
What is happening for you when you look back now? Were you in your body
I know it was an out of body experience, but I'm also thinking because Greg had retired early so that I could amp up my career like as a founder and entrepreneur. So now I'm like, now what? Because if I can't work, what's going to happen? So I had my core people around me. I'm like, shut it down. We're not telling anyone what's going on. I get in shivers now because it was a lot of my friends and even like, and big bosses, you know, big clients that I'm like, this is happening, but I can do work. Greg had had cancer before, lip cancer, poor man. And, you know, he had surgery and I showed up for my radio show like that afternoon, surgery in the morning, radio show in the afternoon. No one knew.
Well, if I remember correctly, and we'll come back and we're going to be kind of jumping around a little bit, but you actually, there was like a prayer room that you actually did your radio show in from the hospital.
Yeah. I went into the prayer room and I did, and there's crying rooms that they take you into the hospitals to tell you bad news. And they gave me a key and I'm going to be honest. I feel bad because sometimes people would be in there crying. I'm like, it's my turn now. But I wasn't crying. I was doing my radio show like with blankets. I brought like winter blankets and jackets. This is like September, October. So I look like the crazy person now, like at the hospital, but I had like winter jackets over my head with a microphone and a laptop doing like a national show from the hospital. So you can really do a podcast or radio show really anywhere.
But we love Staples.
Yeah,
but,
no, do it at Staples. Don't do it at a hospital or in a car.
But just like, I don't know, Taylor, when I hear this, I just think like resilience, figuring it out, because you're now the sole income earner. There's like, you've got, it's all on
it's
you.
It's on me. And it doesn't matter whether it's radio or TV or you're an accountant or you're a doctor. When something like this happens and the ball drops, and if you're the sole income, you know, if you're the breadwinner at that point, you got to figure it out. And it's figure outable, but you have to be resilient. And my thing was, and I'm very public and I talk about everything. And it was really hard for me to shut it down because I'm like, everyone, we're done. Like,
That's why it was when it like hit me in the gut when I saw that GoFundMe, because I also thought, God, like, you're doing this all alone, because I could see in the comments that people did not know.
No. And I didn't want the GoFundMe started. I didn't want the GoFundMe. I had friends that wanted to start because and it's a great organization and it helps, but I won't get into the specifics, but also, well, do you want to talk about Jenny a little bit? Well, I was...
Whatever you're comfortable with.
While this was going on, while Greg had a stroke 2 weeks before, my daughter was being severely bullied. And like, to the point, I won't get into it too much because this is her story, but police were involved, criminal lawyers. This was a lot. So I have a daughter now who is not well and traumatized. And now 2 weeks later, her dad has a stroke. So I'm dealing that in itself when we've talked about it, yeah. That in itself, when your kid is being bullied and like, not just bullied, like criminal lawyers, like it's, I'm like, this is a Netflix show. Like this is another podcast. And then Greg has a stroke, not related at all. But as a teenager, you're thinking it's related. I'm like, no, sweetheart, daddy had this thing since he was a kid.
So what did Jenny think? How did she think it was related?
She thought, did I upset daddy? Did this bullying, did this girl? And like, you know, me trying to help her through that with therapy, and then Greg now having this stroke, I'm like, no, sweetheart, daddy, this just happens. You know, daddy had something in him since he was a child. Could have happened when he was 20. It just happened now.
And Taylor, I think about you, because here you are in your marriage, in your life, where he has retired to really support you. And so that he could focus on the girls and, you know, do other things that he wanted to do and be that person for you and really help you build your business. So dreams
are done.
Dreams are done.
Because we were going to take the business to another level with each other. He retired early.
Yeah.
And to be with the girls, I called him Disney Dad, because daddy good times. I was like, you know, there's always got to be a good cop, bad cop. Yeah. I was a good cop too, but I had taken a step back, and not a step back, but I was with the girls. I did what I needed to do. And then he's like, you know what? I've done what I wanted to do in my career. Let's ramp up for you. And and be with the girls. And also we're the sandwich generation at this age. So he was also, you know, a stroke happened on Monday. His parents were moving into a home on Thursday. So I had to navigate that. And I was the power of attorney of, if they call it health and wealth or whatever, like, cause you've got to do your health and then your finances for Greg. And then I had to pass on the power of attorney for Greg's parents. Cause I'm like, at my capacity, I can't do this. And gave it to his brothers.
And so now if we go back to him being, having that surgery, the skull is removed. He's not waking up. What happens in the next couple of days?
He's on a ventilator and he's on life support.
And what are you thinking?
I'm thinking, what the fuck? Like, what am I going to do now? Like, what am I going to do? And I just kept, like, I'm a robot. Go do your radio show. Go talk to the doctors. Cause now it's navigating something new. I'm like, when do the doctors come in? When do I talk to people? Because they do their rounds, but now we're in a separate. So I had to it's like learning people's schedule and you're not on their schedule. Like they've got their own schedule. They've got like 15, 20 patients they have to see. So, and it's rotating. Doctors are rotating, nurses. And let's be honest, like healthcare people are exhausted. It was just really after COVID people were like, we were in ICU, but it was hard. Like we were where we were, where there were head injuries. We had like, you know, literally someone who just was shot and like chained to the bed beside us. Cause like with police officers, then I have someone who was in a tractor accident. And this is when my dark sense of humor came out. And this is when I met an amazing doctor. I said, why is there police? Like, he's not leaving anywhere. Like he's clearly not going anywhere.
He's not a flight risk at this point.
He's not a flight risk. And I brought Greg like some Squishmallows, which are some toys that the girls loved. I said, well, let's write daddy a note and give him some Squishmallows. Cause he was like, again, on this ventilator and life support and not moving. And just, I'm like, and I met a doctor and he's like, oh, I hate those things. I said, I'm going to keep bringing them to everybody here, especially the guy that's chained to the bed. And then that became my best friend. And this doctor walked me through everything. And then I'm like, when are you here? What's happening? He's like, if you're here at 11, I'm here on my rounds. I'll meet you. And he was an angel. And it's crazy because we have new neighbors across the street and it's their brother-in-law. Small world. So he's got to see how far Greg's come. Anyway, he was my angel because he's like, it's not going to be the same. Your husband's not the same. You have to make some decisions for your family. And he's probably not going to eat. He's probably not going to be able to see. He can't hear. But he said, but we are getting a little bit of movement on his left leg. So it was hopeful. It's very little. He won't be able to walk, but, he's like, keep reading to him, keep visiting him. So I had like radio friends coming in and reading, like people would say, oh, that guy sounds like he's from the BBC. I'm like, cause he is, he's like, he's from the BBC. Now he's reading some, I'm like, read anything. And he has very, very, Greg has very, very good friends. Every Friday during COVID, they'd come over, and hang out in our garage. Cause I would say to a couple of friends on the street, I'm like, listen, I'm going to be divorced if this COVID thing with hanging out with Greg all the time. I love him. I said, and I'm sure you're frustrated with your husbands. So they would come every Friday, the boys, and meet. And to this day, they come every Friday and they hang out with Greg, even though he's nonverbal and paralyzed. They come and I don't know what happens in the garage. I don't want to know.
And so at that point, are you sticking to, well, we said 6 months, or are you thinking, do we end this?
I'm sticking to 6 months, but they're coming in often, the team, because they have to, you know, it's a lot of these hospitals are teaching hospitals. So you can see them reading in their head. They're like, hello, have you made this decision? And then I was like, please stop asking me this. It's not happening. Go ask the person next door. We're done. Like, stop asking. But then I was nice at first. And then I had to be like, I know you're training, but I'm done. Like we got the 6 month mark here and we're only at like a couple months now.
And during that time, what are the girls now coming to the hospital?
No,
they're still not.
They're still scared. We're FaceTiming often and I'm FaceTiming. It's scary because he looks like a little zombie with everything tied up, but they literally have a sign that says bone flap out. I have like signs because people would come in. It's not rehab. And I thought, oh, they're going to be rehab and people are going to come in here. No, not until you get it to a rehabilitation hospital. So there was nothing, but this amazing doctor went to, he's like, your husband's foot, like the atrophy is going to happen. And it was almost immediate, like your hand just slowly. And I'm like, oh my God, what is happening to your body? His hand was slowly closing up. Like you see someone with cerebral palsy or strokes, and his foot was turning. So this doctor got us like, I don't know, some type of contraption, and I would do exercises and move him around. Again, I don't know what I'm doing. I do. I mean, listen, I have my 4-year kinesiology degree that I don't use at all because now that I'm a DJ, but I'm like, all right, let's do some arms or whatever. I don't know.
Going on YouTube.
Going on YouTube, going on TikTok, whatever I do.
But I just like, I'm just trying to picture this, Taylor. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
But at the same time, I want his skull back on. And
because the skull is off.
Yeah.
It's bandaged.
It's bandaged, but it's like the brain is there. Like, and that's scary for the kids. So that's,
time frame of when you can get the skull back on.
Yeah. So it's 3 months with any bone, and they put it in a bone bank. And we have a friend, a mutual, like radio friend whose son went through something. So I called him. I'm like, okay, so how long? Because they waited too long with his son, and his son now has a prosthetic because the bone crumbles. I'm like, I can't have this happen to my husband. He needs to have his skull back on. And, you know, some of the doctors are like, but it's fine. You can live like that. I'm like, there's nothing there and it looks weird. And I don't want him to wear a hat, and it'll be scary for the children. Yeah. So around October, November, they told me 3 months that in September, I'm like, okay, it's going to be holidays. And we know holidays at the hospital, nobody's around. So I got to digging and finding out who the surgeons were, because you can't find their emails. And I found a personal email because I'm a digger. And I'm like, if I can get Brad Pitt's assistant's email, I can get this for my job. I can get this surgeon's email. And I started emailing him pictures of Greg able-bodied and saying, hey, when are we going to put the skull back on? When is this happening? Nothing, nothing. And then I started stepping up going, you'll be, you know, having Christmas in Costa Rica or Boca Raton. We'll be still here in the hospital and Greg's skull won't be back on. And those emails, but I still had nice pictures that I sent to Greg. And then his assistant called me and said, I don't know how you got this email and how, but you're on the waiting list. He's going to get his skull back on before Christmas. So, and then he went back on the ventilator. He didn't wake up for a couple of days after that. And again, we're still not at the 6-month mark. So it was on again, off again between life support and a ventilator. And I don't know if he's going to eat. I don't know if he can hear. I don't know if he can see. I will show you, this is probably inappropriate, but when I'd leave the hospital, because I have a sixth sense of humor, I would place his hands like this. And the nurses would laugh. They're like, oh, Taylor was here. Because I'd leave his hands. He's like,
giving the finger
to strokes. Yeah. Not to the hospital staff. I hope they knew that, but they knew my dark sense of humor.
So as this is happening, I'm just thinking from a wife-husband relationship. When you see him, who do you see?
I see my best friend, but it's changed now because I'm a caregiver, but I'm like, okay, how can I do this? Can he come home? Can I do my work? I have to keep going forward because I do have friends that are widows that have lost everything, like young widows that, and they're resilient, but we're all built differently, right? But you've got to dig deep and you're like, okay, how, and I got to go on for my kids and for me. But you know, that relationship has changed. I'm his caregiver now and he's my best friend. And I want to make sure that he gets everything he needs. So he does get speech, he gets physio. It took us a while to get him into rehab. But he did have like tubes all in his body. And then again, it was like finding people, like I read somewhere that Botox works on, you know, on your body. And I was like leaning over going, maybe I could try some. I don't know. but I found a doctor that would come to the hospital to give him Botox so that the atrophy would slow it down. But they weren't allowed at this specific hospital. I'm like, find someone who wants to train. But because I'm like, it's going to help the atrophy.
Taylor, I'm just thinking of, like, because you're now an advocate. You're doing your own research. Like, you've got a whole other job, really, as a caregiver. And you've got your daughters, and your daughters are going through things as well. And you're the breadwinner because there was no money coming in from Greg because of when he retired, right?
Right.
So Like, how are you managing during all of this? All of this.
I was still doing the radio show from crying rooms. Sometimes in my truck, like I would be underground in a truck and not get Wi-Fi. The Wi-Fi was out. I would like hook up to like, thank you, like satellite. I would hook up to satellite in a car to upload radio shows. And I pivoted my career because I'm like, I had some good mentors, like Greg's best friends. They're like, if you can't be on radio and TV, what if you start representing people? Mm-hmm. Like, and you can do that from his bed. So then I'd already been kind of repping some people as it, like I was the ghost no one knew about. Like if you watch TV shows and you see lifestyle experts, they're on my roster. Like they're, I don't like saying roster, but I have to own it now because I was the ghost no one knew about. And I'm like, all right. So I started putting people that I knew that were like me on TV. And that's from his bed. I was booking everything while doctors were coming in. Cause like, if I physically can't be in an office or on a television screen, I'll book other people.
And when he got his skull back on.
Yeah.
And then when did he come out of that? When did he wake up from that?
That was a couple of days. So it was good. That, I mean, it was bad for 2 days. Cause I'm like, are we back here again? Like yeah. He's not going to wake up. And then 2 days later he woke up, but there's like, you know, pulmonary embolisms, like me, like at the hospital getting tubes and suctioning him because everyone again was so exhausted. I'm advocating for other people, like other patients. I'm seeing them just like no one's changing them and they're soiled. And like, I'm on this floor and I'm like, what the fuck is happening? And I'm like, oh, John over there needs that. They're like, you're not his family. I'm like, I'm his family today. So we're doing that. Okay. So, and then meanwhile, Greg is like on life support, but I'm seeing other people whose families are not there. I'm like, what is happening? Like we need to help.
And so when do things actually start to, I guess, stabilize? Maybe? Yeah.
It would be in January. We are now looking at rehab hospitals, but we're being denied because they're like, he's not going to walk or talk anymore or ever. So you think you're like, oh, we just go to the rehab hospital and in Canada, everybody pays for anything. No. So I was getting denied every hospital that we were trying to get into. And they were trying to force us to bring him home with a 15-year-old. And they're like, we're going to show you how to change the tubes and do all the stuff. And one of the nurses, I again, my dark sense of humor, I said, you have teenagers, right? And she's like, yeah. I said, did they clean the room? She's like, no. I said, so Mike, don't clean the room. You think they're going to clean a tube and change? No, like we're not training anybody. I want them to have a separate life. And kudos to the families that do that. And you are amazing. We had made that decision. You do. Yeah. But it is hard work. And I had really great family members that have gone through it. And they're like, you will break. You're already broken. You're drowning. This is going to put you right underwater if you do this. And then you have to move. And what is life going to look like? So I found a doctor at another hospital and I said, can you find out why I'm being denied? Like, why am I being denied this, like getting into a rehabilitation hospital? And it was a friend of Steve. We have a mutual friend, Steven. So, you know, you reach for your contacts. I was like, who do I know that goes? Da, da, da. And this doctor said, well, what they're writing is like, you want Greg home and he's going to walk and talk. And I'm like, what? So I went back to the person writing the report. I said, let's do something like, I would like him to roll over. Like, it was like, I would like him to be able to, you know, stretch, what, like little things. And then we got him in.
Oh my goodness. And so has he then been in the same place?
We had to move him after that. He had to move into, he's part-time with us and part-time in a long-term care facility so that I can have a break to continue to work. And then he comes home. He was coming home 5 days a week. And now we've set it back a bit because work gets crazy, but I'm very blessed for that. But again, I had people in your life. You meet people in your life. And I was very lucky to have my girlfriend whose husband had a stroke, not that lucky, but her husband had a stroke when he was 37 and she was with me the whole time, you know, now in her 40s. So she had me and he's able-bodied, able to walk. And she's like, Taylor, this is too much. You can't do this with the kids and everything. You need help.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so when when I saw that GoFundMe, which I feel like was in May 2023.
March 2023. So Greg is now at a rehab hospital, still okay, but it's not okay. Like you're still advocating. There's people, I'm advocating for another John who's on a Hoyer lift. If Hoyer lifts help pick you up and move you for a bed, and it saves nurses and PSWs. It's like a little swing that they pick you up. I remember the one day I walked into the rehab hospital, there was a guy just swinging there, left, and someone on their phone. And I'm seeing Greg, and I'm like, what's happening here? And this individual said, I'm on a break. I said, I'm not, let's go. Let's bring him down. Like, this is dignity. And it was, and this is happening in many, many hospitals. And again, the whole family, they're like, you're not his family. And I'm like, and I did my whole, like, I am today. Let's get him down.
You brought Steel Town.
I brought Steel Town.
You brought Steel Town.
You can
Town.
Take the girl out of Steel City, but you can't take the Steel City.
Yeah. Hamilton is representing. Yeah.
But now, I mean, it was difficult having him at this facility. And, but then we started to see a little bit of gains, not crazy gains, but again, having those real conversations, like, can I bring him home? Can I do this?
Okay. Let me ask you this. Does he know what is happening?
No, now he does. But at the time it was like, I didn't know what version of Greg I had. So I'm like, is this 7-year-old? Is it 17-year-old? And then a man had walked in, and there was, you know, a gentleman that was 5 years old, acted like a 5-year-old because strokes can do that. And a PSW had walked in and said, Greg, would you like to be like this or like this? Because Greg could kind of understand a bit. And Greg pointed to the gentleman who had no idea, who was 5. Because Greg has a little bit of understanding. Mm-hmm. And I think his doctors now say we saved him and he understands stuff because of all of the love, all of the care, all of the things, because he really shouldn't be alive with the amount of skull and brain that's like it's not there. So I don't understand how he's able. We've got him feeding, he's eating. I've taught him how to Snapchat with the girls, even though it's not great and it doesn't make sense. But for my daughters, they love it. There's some form of communication. Maybe when they're 30, it might be weird because again, he has weird, like he's trying, again, we don't know what version, but.
And so now at the GoFundMe at March.
Oh, in March. So I'm at Bridgepoint. Yeah. So I'm feeling okay. I'm kind of like, but I'm still drowning. People are like, you need help. And I come into my house and I'm really drowning. And there is a massive flood going from my second floor to my main floor to the basement. And this is where I do TV. Like my main floor, I have lighting and I have beams similar to Staples. Shout out to Staples. The beams saved the only area. That was the only area not affected, TV, God, universe, whatever. Cause I'm like, I gotta still work and this is not wet. So I'll just keep working while the flood's going on. But that
literally drowning,
And literally. I'm like, universe, if you're trying to tell me I'm drowning. And that's when my friend said, that's it. You're done. We're starting a GoFundMe because you got to get the kids out of here. The flood was so bad and from a toilet and we had just got it fixed. And I had called the guy that morning saying, it's still making that sound. Well, it was still making that sound at 2 o'clock. So from probably 9 o'clock in the morning till 2 o'clock in the afternoon, water just was pouring like a waterfall. I mean, I manifested an indoor pool. I just think the universe didn't know. I didn't want it that type of pool.
You have to be more specific.
I was like, I just want it in a separate. So that's when two of my very good friends just said, that's it. Cause I'm like robbing Peter to pay Paul, moving stuff. If you have, you know, and I'm trying to keep Greg and paying for his physio. Cause I'm like, I'm trying to get him to talk. I'm trying to get him walk. Let's see what we can do. And then the house and insurance, I'm going to like, is anyone here in insurance? Okay. I call it uninsurance. I'll just leave it at that. You pay for many years. You don't make a claim ever. And then you feel ashamed that you're making a claim from a flood. And I'm like, I'm a single mom trying to work with a swimming pool now that I didn't want.
And what was it like then to put the GoFundMe out and see the response? I can get emotional. Like,
it was... like the love and the support and people, cause people had no idea. And they're like, what, for 6 months, you were doing what you're doing your radio show from where? It was amazing. And all of that went to Greg, like everything. I still have, like, Greg got physio. He got speech. Greg is there because of the care that people shared in the support. I still people make fun of me. I still don't have furniture or anything where the flood was. I didn't replace it because everything goes to Greg. I have one couch. I have two little chairs. I feel like a university student, but I'm like, fuck it. I don't care. Like, you know, with this home, I know you might have to like beat me out sometimes. Is that okay?
It's all good. It's all good. It's all good. So you get this outpouring, really.
I was really emotional, but then at the same time, with the good comes the bad. There is people messaging me on Instagram saying, I would have unplugged him. How could you do this to your husband? How could you make him live like this? But thank goodness I'm in radio and TV. We've deal with this all the time. So I didn't message these people back. You know, you go and look at them. I'm like, oh yeah, you've never dealt with this. And that's a decision for each family member, right? Like, you know.
And then part of it was to get Greg home, but that you live in the beaches. And for those of you that are not familiar with Toronto, those homes have stairs. There's like, it wasn't fitted for somebody in Greg's position.
We didn't have ramps. And I will say, like, we had people, that was a lesson learned. Like there's snakes out there and they will take advantage of you when you're in a position because you're desperate. You're like, how do I get him home? I need to get him home. And he comes home often now, but, we have mutual friends. I won't share their names, but if you DM me, but I call these, and they're big personalities on TV, and they didn't know. They reached out. They're like, what the hell is going on? Like, we heard through the grapevine he had a stroke, but like, we thought it was like, you know, you have a stroke and then you're back. Like, cause he was really, really young. I'm like, no, this is like, he's in a wheelchair that's large. It's crazy. He's paralyzed. I said, I just need a ramp. And they gave me their contractors. We built a ramp and had Greg home, and Greg comes home often. We had the hospital bed. We have everything there so that, you know, when he comes home, he can feel like he's at home.
So what is Greg's status now? Does he recognize you? Still, which Greg are we going to get?
Sometimes it depends on when I get him in the morning. It's like, you know, when you wake up, you're fresh. Like I get a version of him I feel like he knows what's going on. And sometimes I feel like there's 15 URLs open. But at the same time, with aphasia comes possible dementia. His parents had early onset dementia at 60. So I'm like, I have to get him to a point where we kind of understand, because if dementia sets in, I will never know. Cause I really, I have not talked to my husband in 3 years. I've talked at him, which is a nightmare for men or any couple to talk at your partner, period. But we don't have a full conversation. I include him on stuff, but it's all on me. And sometimes he's not there.
And then how is this for you, Taylor? Like, just thinking of, you know, you as my friend, and gosh, like he is your best friend.
Yeah.
But you guys had dreams and had conversations all the time.
Yeah, all the time about work and life. He always got sick of me talking about work. So I don't talk to him about work all the time. And he jokes about that. But I'm like, I can tell you any secret now. And I know you'll not say anything. There's so much tea to spill. So-and-so did this on the street and you won't believe it. No, I don't do that. Maybe.
So what is it like to be in this version of the relationship for you? How have you made sense of it, if you have?
I still don't make sense of it. Okay. It's difficult because I'm a living widow. That's how and I've had to come to terms with therapy and all, like, because that version of Greg is gone and I am a single mom. And I'll have other single moms saying, well, you're not a single mom, but I am a single mom because I'm the sole provider. And now I have someone else that I'm taking care of. And it's all on me to do that. So it's hard. I scream sometimes, I cry. And then if anyone ever sees me for a dog walk from their beaches, I just like, just leave me alone. It's my time to cry and my therapy. And I go for a dog walk. I walk along the water. I do all my crying so that my kids don't see me cry at home. They've seen me cry, but I just don't want them to see me like sitting in a bed. I have very good friends. You know, I would say maybe 3 times I haven't been able to get out of bed. You have those moments and I just don't want to get out. And I have friends going, get up. That's not you. And it's hard. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to get up. I'm going to do a radio show and be on TV and let's go. Put on some makeup, put on some Spanx or NYX, whatever you prefer.
I just cannot even imagine, Taylor. And also because it just happened in an instant, right? There was no, there's a diagnosis. This is what you can expect. Like 1 minute you're saying goodnight and the next minute you're calling the ambulance.
And it is dreams over, certain dreams for sure. Yeah. I've had to pivot what I want to do. They're not over forever. They're just, we've talked about plan B. I always have.
Yes.
It's always having a plan B. I've always had a plan B for radio and TV. So I'm like, all right, now what's my plan B as me? And now it's like, I was just with friends at an event last night and they're like, okay, you've been taking care of Greg and the girls. Now what about you? What's your dreams? What are you doing? And you know, that's sometimes a hard pill to swallow because my dreams were going to be with my girls and my husband. And now I have different memories and things that I do with the girls, different activities, different things for Greg. And now I have to do stuff on my own.
Well, your whole world has changed because you also have to now navigate a whole different landscape. Like even things like Wheel-Trans. And because I know he's gotten lost at times, right?
He's gotten lost. So Wheel-Trans is a service that picks up people with disabilities and they've lost him twice. I've never missed a radio show. Clearly I've done it in a crying room. I missed a radio show one morning because I called the home as I would in the morning. We're trying to balance. He's at the house, he's at the home, so I can take a break, like, and you know, but I want him to be there for the girls. So I called in the morning. I'm like, hey, good morning. Just want to check on Greg. What's going on? And they're like, we thought he was with you. I'm like, what? No, he never comes home at this time. So he, because he's nonverbal and paralyzed on the one side, couldn't wave to say no to the Wheel-Trans driver who picked him up. And I don't know where they took him. So I was in shock. I didn't show up for a radio show. We have a mutual, Marilyn Dennis, who is a radio and TV talk show. She was like, where are you? You're supposed to be here. I wasn't picking up the phone because now I'm like, calling Wheel-Trans saying, did you pick up Greg? And they're like, no, we don't have anyone on that list. I go, exactly. Because he was not supposed to be picked up. I'm like, who was the individual you picked up at this time at the, and they're like, well, we can't share that information. I'm like, but you got to share the information. Where was that person going? Because now you picked up the wrong person. So I found him in a hospital. I went to different hospitals driving around and he was like sitting for dialysis in a room. Well, clearly he wasn't getting dialysis because he had no health card. So then I joked with Marilyn, my friend, and we put on a sign that on him saying, if lost, please call. Again, my dark sense of humor. And I had my name on it. No, I wrote, he has aphasia, all that kind of stuff. And literally a couple of weeks later, I'm waiting at my daughter's grade 8 grad, trying to go in, you know, and I was like, daddy's supposed to be here. And then I turned to like a random lady. I said, oh, they probably lost him. I'm sure again, Wheel-Trans. And then I pick up my phone calls right away. And it's a woman. She's like, hi, I'm here with Greg. We're in a parking lot. And I'm like, where are you? And so then my youngest daughter starts crying. The middle one who's graduating has no idea. And I said to this woman, I said, tell them to hold the grad. And we ran a kilometer, took off my shoes, and we sprinted down the street to this, again, angel who found my husband just sitting in the sun in a parking lot. They left him in a parking lot and not even the right location, like not. And then then I got back and it was all messy and sweaty and my middle one who was graduating had no idea until after, but I didn't want to, again, upset anyone. I said, shut her down. We're going to get him. Hold the grad. And there was other classes that had to graduate and we got him there. I ran disgusting bare feet without the heels down a Toronto street. But, you know, it was a lot. And my youngest, you know, I think she's very traumatized by this. And she was also the one that found him with me. So it was a lot. And, just this weekend, they didn't pick him up and it's hard. I put him on buses. It's a large, I take him places. We go to concerts. We go to Blue Jays, Raptors games, like everything. I take him and people are like, well, how are you taking him like that? I'm like, why can't I? And it was very sweet. So this is Wheel-Trans. And listen, we use them all the time. So it those are bad situations, but there are really great situations too. But the one time, because Greg has his Friday night party nights with the boys, I'm upstairs showering to get ready. And my daughters run up and they're like, mommy, daddy's home. And there's someone else here. Wheel-Trans had let someone else on to come to Greg's Friday night party. So I called his location. I called his home. I said, are you missing so-and-so? his name's Mark. I won't say last names. And they're like, yeah. I said, well, he's here at my house and he wants to party, but I'm putting him back in an Uber with it. Cause I'm like, I can't have a wheelchair. And then I don't know that this family doesn't know me. And now he's at the house. I don't know what happens in the man cave, probably some illegal stuff that I'm not supposed to know, substances. I don't know. I'm not allowed in there. But so I had to put Mark back on a bus. So I'm like, wheelchair. He's like, I've heard about Greg's Friday nights and I want to come. I said, from who? Like, but
who's talking?
Well, his friends, I will say Greg's friends go when he's not at home and they visit him at his other residence and knock on the door at like 3 a.m, like, you know, 17-year-olds. And because they've said this is his second home. So the director of his home is like, could you please talk to Greg's friends? They're coming in at 3 a.m. and they're banging after drinking probably. I'm like, well, you said it was his home. They'd probably do that here too. So you can talk to them. I can mention something. And they're professionals. They're lawyers. They're like teachers. They're VPs. But I'm glad that they're in his life.
Yeah. What else are you grateful for from this whole experience?
I'm grateful for the community on social. I mean, you have such a great social following and you know, I would get mad at social media sometimes and it still frustrates me sometimes, but I'm happy, like the support that I get because it's like therapy. And when people, because there's so many people, like even you guys, I'm going to talk to you after because there's stuff going on in people's lives that you're like, there's so many different advocates out there, people like that are helping family members. And there's, you know, we want to talk, do we want to talk about like what to do? Like with,
yeah, we definitely will for sure.
But, I'm very happy for social and I'm so happy for the community. And I'm glad I talked about it. It was hard for 6 months and my family was worried about me because you hold that all in and they're like, we don't want you having something happening.
Because then what happens?
Right. Then it's the Titanic and I'm Leo DiCaprio. I'm going down. I don't have the amulet.
Yeah.
I'm not Rose. So
you're, yeah. And again, like this was all so unexpected, disrupted your life. And you've shared a little bit about Greg and we've gotten to know him since the stroke. But I would love for you to share about Greg before the stroke. What was he like?
He was a great dad. He was a like, if you have, for those that are like, that have kids, like he was he loved his girls. Like he was a girl dad. So he did all the things. Neighbors would come up to me and like say, oh my God, we saw Greg. I'm like, yeah. Cause he was just a great dad, taking them to events, doing crafts, like letting them paint, you know, his nails doing, and he was a manly man before, but then he was like, all right, painting the nails, getting makeup on. Even now when he comes home, we paint his nails or he gets his nails painted with the girls, like different colors. But he was just and he was an advocate for many other people too. Like for LGBTQ, like, and like he was a great advocate for other people. So, we talk about, or I talk at him. I'm like, there's a reason for this. We don't know the reason. And I said, but he, when we decided to share him, cause he was home and it was a lot. And I had to make the hard decision of like splitting him, like to be at a home and at my home. There's patients and nurses that come up to me in PSW saying he's such a beacon of light for people here. And he makes people so happy, even though he can't talk, he just will listen and you know, pats people on the back and he's the same Greg that way. He's a great listener and he's advocating for people in different ways. And it's good to hear that he's helping people there. And I'm like, I don't know what the reason is, Greg, but we'll figure it out. But you're helping people. Also, I think people are attracted to him. There's a couple of women that are like, are you getting divorced from him? No, we're step off, Susie. Okay.
And what kind of husband was he? What kind of partner was he?
He was so supportive. I mean, for someone to make the decision to take a step back from their career so I could like ramp up my career. And we had talked about that many times. Like I've had many opportunities. And because I work in radio and TV, I had many opportunities to take like a morning show in a different province or a bigger job. And I'm like, I got to stay here with the girls. I wanted to, and I had great mentors, like I said, Marilyn, where I'm like, I would talk to people, but Greg, I was like, okay, you do your career. And then when we're ready. So he was so supportive and, you know, and that's what's tough because we had dreams of where we wanted to take the business, which is just pivoted. That's all. It's just the business has changed. And that's fine. And I still bring him into the business and talk but I tell him I'm going to spend the money.
And so for many, many of the people that watch this podcast in the room, female professionals, entrepreneurs, female founders, what are some conversations we need to have that you wish you had had, or what are some things that we need to get into place?
It's getting insurance in place. It's having all the right people in place, the power of attorney. Like there's so many, even professionals that I know, friends are like, we didn't have that discussion with our partner about like, when is it time? You don't want to think that. And like, listen, I hope it never happens to anybody, but you need to have that conversation where it's like, what is the magic number or how do you want to live? Do you want to live incapacitated? If that's, you know, at what point do you want, if you're on life support, to be unplugged? I know it's a hard conversation to have, but have that conversation. And talking about insurance, like Greg and I, we did have those talks. And when he retired, he had an opportunity to take on more critical life insurance. And he said, no, I don't want to do it. And you know what? That would have helped a lot because we didn't have critical life insurance. When he retired, there's a sweet spot for disability insurance. He does not have disability insurance. When you retire, you have in Canada, I think it's 15 months, but I'm sure someone from CRA will correct me or some tax person, but we had missed that. So everything we pay for. So I had to reset as a founder and as an owner of a company. I'm like, okay, I have my cousin does insurance. So I'm like, what am I going to do for disability if I can't work? What do I need for critical life insurance? What about house? You have to look at all your assets. Who's going to take over your business? My daughter's now 18. I'm like, I need money. If something ever happened to Greg or I, or, you know, you don't want to think about like an accident where both parents or both caregivers, you need someone in place so that money can come out in and out and think, because bills are still going to come out. The bill collectors are still going to be there and not, but you've got to pay for stuff. Have insurance on your credit card if you can afford it. It is expensive. Like I've had to like sit down and go, can I afford this? But I'm like, no, I have to do this because if something happens to me, the family has to be taken care of. Or the business has to be taken care of, and have that in place, have those conversations with whoever that is. And if you are your own, you know, I'm sure you have strategic coaches, you've got, and now you've got lots of people, have that plan B if something was to happen. My plan B was to continue to do radio and TV, which I'm still doing, but then I've also pivoted to be an agent for people and help them get their success and their dreams on TV so that if something again was to happen, and Greg's had two other mini strokes where it's been hard, I've had to pivot and then put other people on TV.
So there's sometimes a sense, because we're in Canada and healthcare, that you actually don't have to pay out of pocket.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you don't have to give us a figure, but a range. What does it look like?
It depends on the home that you're living in, and it depends on if they're at home. And I did the calculations for people. If I was to have the type of support I had at the hospital, it was going to be between $80,000 to $120,000 a year. If you can find the resources.
And that's out of pocket.
Yeah. And I didn't have that. Like then there's little things like, hey, we need briefs, or we need cream. All of that is extra. For example, if a PSW or a nurse, like very similar, like someone, people are going to call in sick. And if you're the sole provider and I've got to go to work and I have to be on the radio and Michelle or whoever's supposed to show up, but her son and someone's sick, now what do? Now it's a domino effect, and yes. I can't have that domino effect happen.
Yes.
The homes, there's government homes, there's private homes. If it was a private home, sometimes between $14,000 to $20,000 a month in Greg's, and a waiting list. Yeah. So there's waiting lists because they try to figure out how bad you are. Because Greg is nonverbal paralyzed, he moved up on the list. Or like, oh, finally, oh, this is a VIP list we do not want to be on. Right. It's like, yeah. Great. Yay. We're going to get in sooner. But they try, I will say, because I know a lot of people watching, also your parents, you probably have to make these decisions for your parents. Do not let the homes or the hospitals push you around. Especially in Canada, they will tell you, you have to pick 5 homes. You got to do this. You got to do that. I'm like, I'm picking one. But when you pick that one, I had 24 hours to make the decision, and then you lose the bed. Mm-hmm. So, and I had to think, I'm like, no, I want them at home full time, but I want them here. Both. But be prepared to, and it's a lot of money. So yeah. Save, but it's hard. And sometimes, listen, sometimes people, divorce their spouses or give their parents to the government to take care, like they, 'cause they can't afford it. And maybe they're not getting the best care, but if that's all you can afford, because you're going to go under, but again, they can ship them around and do stuff. And it's a lot. And people think that it's all covered in Canada. It's not. And it's, and you get audited all the time from, because there's people that take advantage of the system too. So, and it was interesting. And we had this conversation. I had someone from CRA, which is like IRS, call me up because we were going through all the paperwork. And she's like, so like, who's paying for all this? And I'm like, she's like, there's no, I'm like, no, it's me. Mm. It's hustle and blood, sweat and tears,
yeah.
But it's, you know, and when you turn a certain age, when he's older, you know, when you're 60 and 65, of course you have your CPP and your old age, whatever it's called now, but that doesn't cover the cost of the homes.
No.
So yeah. And it's all the extra stuff. And I, the doctors have told me to stop giving him speech and physio because, he's plateaued. But Greg was very, very fit. He worked out. He did yoga. He meditated. He was very spiritual. And I'm just like, I can't, I got to give him physio all the time. And I have to give him speech because like, if you're not doing rehab, you're not rehabilitating. So when, you know, as soon as you start working out, you're like, ooh, what's happening here? I think the same for strokes. There might not be massive wins, but there's going to be small wins for him. And I'm going to keep giving it to him because he's my best friend. And I'd hope he'd do the same for me. So, and I'm going to sell foot pictures after this. No, joking.
So now that it's been a few years, here we are. Yeah. What are your dreams, Taylor? What's next for Taylor? Are you starting to think about that again?
Yeah, I'm getting excited about certain things. And with the girls, like I took the girls away for a trip. We went to New York last Christmas and we had a conversation about what our dreams are. And I said, this is our new family unit and Daddy's still in our family unit and Mommy will love Daddy forever. He's my best friend. But I have said, you know, I'm young. Who knows, you know, what's in store for me? My friends.
Do you mean like a
companion? Yeah. I have a lot of husbands. I have a lot of gay husbands. So, but also just, you know, there's dreams that I want to fulfill in my life and to still help Greg too. 'Cause I'm like, I will hustle and work hard 'cause I still want to give him everything. So whoever that is in my life later in my life, and if there is or not, I just want them to know that like that Greg is my best friend forever. And the father of my kids and whatever my dreams are, he's still part of that full time. I'd like to write a book, you know.
How many of us would be reading that book? Yeah. Yeah.
There's other stuff to talk about that again, I can't talk.
Yes.
But you know, and I am starting a podcast with a girlfriend called Unscheduled. So because life is unscheduled, really. Yeah. Right?
Yes.
Life is and you know, you try and schedule things along the way and anyway.
And I see that for you, Taylor. I see a companion. I see a man who's not gay.
We can live in a compound in Italy or something. Yeah. You're all invited. I'm coming to the retreat.
Come to the retreat. I truly do. Like I had said at the beginning, Taylor's one of the nicest people that I have met in this industry. And I don't know, you know, my clients that are here, what we do is very unapologetically spiritual, but highly practical. And I don't know why this happened. I mean, this is when it gets hard to be spiritual. It's all easy to be spiritual when you're at a retreat and you're by the pool and you're like, yeah. Yes, I love everybody. I'll have another margarita. But when your partner is not your partner as yeah. you knew him before, when you're in the hospitals, when you're trying to navigate this, this is when it's hard to be fucking spiritual.
It is.
And you wonder, why did this happen?
You are like, and I'm a very spiritual person and I've been very mad at, but then I'm like, I got to dig deep for the positive. There's a reason why this happened. And there's some, you know, and I've had the therapist say, you know, but there doesn't have to be a reason. I'm like, no, but there is. There is like, yeah. There's a reason why me, why Greg,
yeah.
I'm, you know, I'm a positive person. If you follow me on social, like I try and find positive stuff. I don't share a lot about Greg because Greg was very private too. I was allowed 2 pictures a year, our birthday, because we share the same birthday, December 18th. Also Brad Pitt, the same birthday. He touched my hand once. And oh, yes. And whoever did his work, he looks good. And then we were allowed, I was allowed our anniversary. So I don't post that much. I post like his anniversary of when he had his stroke, because I want, there's people that want to see how well he's doing. And, yes. And from everyone's support, he's able to communicate with my daughters and he's able to stand with help for 30 seconds and walk parallel bars. So yeah, I'm very blessed.
Well, Taylor, I know that this is something that you haven't been speaking about. You're just sort of now getting comfortable to talk about it and share it. Yeah. So thank you for being here and sharing so openly with everyone here in the audience, but those at home that will be listening to this. And I don't know why, but I know that it doesn't define your destiny.
No, it doesn't. You're right.
You've been such a light in this industry. And I think that light is going to continue to shine even brighter and brighter and brighter. And I'm excited for your future. I'm excited for the girls.
Yes.
You know, Jenny University. Yeah.
All Julia, Jackie, all of the girls.
All the J's.
All the J's. Jesse and Jeff, the dogs. I don't know. My name should be something different.
So thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for doing this. Taylor Kay.
Thank you.
Everybody. Thank you.